like this, and I hope you do. I'm going to talk about the Ark of the Covenant. The Old and New Testaments of the Bible are at times referred to as the Old and New Covenants. The Ark of the Covenant is also often called the Ark of the Testament. This last day remnant that I've been talking about for the last several weeks, the last day remnant of the woman in the wilderness, as well as her remnant seed, will possess an excellent knowledge of the Ark as it relates to God's promises. Now in Revelation 12:17, we're told, "And the dragon was wroth with the woman." This is after Lucifer is cast out of heaven. The woman, Israel, has been driven into the Negev. "And went to make war with the remnant of her seed." And it defines the characteristics of this remnant of her seed, "which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." The Ark of the Testament contained the commandments in Solomon's temple. Aaron's rod that budded and the pot of manna, by the time it was placed in Solomon's temple, had long since disappeared. After its appearance in Solomon's temple, we know that in Herod's temple, the commandments weren't there. At least the Ark wasn't there, and so we say the commandments weren't there. The commandments were a part of God's covenant with His chosen people. While I do not know what future part, if any, that the earthly Ark of the Covenant will play in last day events, I do believe it is worthwhile to at least consider if it still exists, and if so, where is its present location. For a long time, I leaned strongly in my early ministry, when I was a young man, to believing it was carried away in Babylonian captivity. But I've read a lot of reports, done a lot of studying in the Mishnah, the Talmud, the Tosefta, and I now believe the most likely location is under the Temple Mount itself. I've studied that thing intensely now for more than 20 years. I've come to some conclusions, and I'm an analyst. I don't come to conclusions lightly, and I try to thread out evidence that's superfluous. Now, in Revelation 11:13-19, we find in the same hour was there a great earthquake, and the tenth part of the city fell. And in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000, and the remnant were affrighted. Now, it is possible that this could mean what was left in Jerusalem. But the remnant is usually used to refer to a relatively small number by comparison. And there are going to be more than 7,000 men there in Jerusalem. And I think the use of this particular word at this time is referring to the remnant that is in the Negev wilderness, testifying of Jesus Christ to the woman, Israel. And the remnant were frightened. Now, when it says affrightened, that doesn't mean that they were frightened in the wrong way. It means they had a reverential fear and respect of the one who did it. And they are the ones who are going to have been testifying to Israel in the Negev that Jesus is their Messiah and their God, and they're going to have been telling Israel what God is going to do. But even they, I think, will be stunned at this. And the reason I think it is that remnant is what it says next: "And gave glory to the God of heaven." I don't think that a bunch of the Antichrist army could give glory to the God of heaven. So I think this is referring to that remnant we've been talking about in the Negev. Verse 19. "And the temple of God," same chapter, "and the temple of God was opened in heaven. And there was seen in his temple the Ark of the Testament." That's the Ark of the Covenant. Now, some people believe that this is the Ark of the Covenant on earth and that God took it up to heaven. I don't. I think the Ark of the Testament, the Ark of the Covenant here on earth, was an earthly, material, physical manifestation of a spiritual ark in heaven made not of elements of the earth, but of spiritual materials with which I'm not familiar. His temple in heaven, here we see the Ark of the Testament. This is a heavenly scene. "And there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail." Now, when you talk about the Ark of the Covenant, You're talking about something that God put here on earth, along with everything else in the tabernacle or tent, all the accoutrements, the tent or tabernacle, everything that had to do with that was a pictorial illustration on earth, a shadow on earth, or a figure on earth, or a symbol on earth of things in heaven. He told Nicodemus if he had told him of earthly things and he did not understand, how could he tell him of heavenly things and expect him to understand? But these things were pictures or shadows of what's in heaven. So in Hebrews 9, 8 and 9, and then verses 3 through 5, the Holy Ghost, this signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest. The holiest of all was that area behind the curtain. First you went into the beautiful gate heading west. Then you went into the court of the women. Then you went through the Nicanor gate. Then you went through the temple gate into the holy place. And finally behind the curtain, a double curtain there, was the Ark of the Covenant in a small cubical area there, where the holiest of holies, the Shekinah glory of God, dwelt, and only the high priest was allowed to go in on the Day of Atonement. The Holy Ghost, this signifying that the way to the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while as the first tabernacle or tent was standing, which was a figure for the time then present. It merely figured on earth what had already existed in heaven, and this merely was a form of God placing on earth something that people could worship in that resembled the form of worship in heaven. Then he goes on in Hebrews 4 and 5 to talk about what was in the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the Ark of the Covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna and Aaron's rod that budded and the tables of the covenant. Of course, they did not have the Ark of the Covenant in Herod's temple at the time of Christ. And over it, the cherubims of glory shadowing the mercy seat. Two cherubim with their wings stretched in toward the center of the ark itself. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because there are a lot of very convincing writers and scientists and archaeologists who write a lot of different things in a lot of magazines. Some of them are very reputable. And because they have names, and because they're published in magazines, people who don't keep up with all this, people who have not put a keen interest into it and don't follow it constantly, can be led to believe by many of these people that what they're saying, that's it, that settles it, it's right there in the book, that's what it is. And so, in the last 10 years, we have had more stuff come out of Israel by archaeologists, physicists, scientists, religionists, on different aspects of the temple than we've ever had in the history of the nation of Israel. Some of it's good, some of it isn't. Tonight I'm going to talk about a report that isn't. Now, the reason I'm going into this tonight is because I think it is important, number one, if this ark exists. And number two, assuming it does, and I believe it does, if so, where is it hidden? Now, in the writings of the Mishnah, it merely says that the ark was taken away. And it doesn't say that the Babylonians took it away. It merely indicates that it was taken away and hidden. Why? Well, if you know the history of the city of Jerusalem, it has been overrun many times. And it was the normal, common custom of any group of people that had a temple or a place of worship to have underground caverns beneath it, to have special escape routes, and to have places where they hid the important articles of worship when they were attacked. The Mishnah and others indicate that Solomon, in his day and time, underneath the temple, had a special place created for the hiding of the ark. And that when the other temples were built later on, they merely left the ark in that place, facing in the right direction, so that the people were still worshiping toward the ark in the right manner. Now, here's an allusion in Shechelem 6, 1 and 3, which is in the Mishnah, about this hidden ark. There were 13 shofar chests, 13 tables, and 13 prostrations in the temple. Now, prostrations mean they bowed down to worship a most holy
object. They of the house of Gamaliel and of the house of R. Hananah, the prefect of the priest, used to make 14 prostrations. And where was the added one? Opposite the wood store. Now I'm going to show you where I think the wood store was, and then we're going to talk about it. Opposite the wood store, for thus was the tradition among them from their forefathers, that the ark lay hidden. That's the place above where they believe the ark lay hidden below, and this is what many of the rabbis believe today. Once when a priest was occupied therein, in this place of the wood store, he saw a block of pavement that was different from the rest. In other words, he looked down, and there was one block that was different. It had been, looked like it had been taken up, and it was an entrance to a lower chamber. He went and told it to his fellow, but before he could make an end of the matter, his life departed. So they knew assuredly that there the ark lay hidden. Where did they make the prostrations? Four times in the north, four times in the south, three in the east, and twice in the west, opposite the 13 gates. The southern gates, counting from the west, were the upper gate, the kindling gate, the gate of the firstlings, and the water gate. Now, at this time, let's take a look at those gates. Now, I am of the belief that the temple did not set where the Dome of the Rock sets. And that's one of the reasons I'm doing this tonight. The Dome of the Rock sets right about here in the court of the Gentiles. I believe Ezekiel and his predictions in the 43rd chapter of Ezekiel, when they rebuild the millennial temple, refers to this as the place of the profane thing where the dome had set. I believe that Kaufman, who advocated in 1983 that it set north, is right. Now this would be the upper gate. This would be the kindling gate. This would be the gate of the firstlings. And this would be the water gate. Now, if they brought the kindling in here, we don't know exactly where it was. And the Mishnah does not say, because this was written and the people just automatically understood where a lot of these things were. I think it's very probable that they may have kept the wood somewhere back in here. I don't know where. And they say that the prostration was done opposite the wood gate. Opposite the wood gate in here would be toward the holy place. And so I tend to believe that the Ark of the Covenant is hidden under the northern end of the Temple Mount somewhere in here. Now I came to this conclusion on my own. Afterwards, from reading the Mishnah, afterwards I found out that some of the actual rabbis and one of the trips over there believe the same thing. Now, it's important where the temple set. But to be perfectly honest, if you follow any one writer and say, he's right, let me show you what you're facing. From 1864 onward, here's where they put it. One of them put it north, one south, one over it, one back of it, one over it. One back of it, one back of it, one over it, one back of it, and here's Kaufman, which is, I believe he's correct, to the north of it. And now Rittmeyer comes along in 1985 and does this. Rittmeyer's got a problem. Money. This guy is selling stuff like you wouldn't believe. He's selling an awful lot of material on this to an awful lot of people, and he's getting rich. Kaufman, it's just an old physicist, and believe me, it takes a brain to be a physicist. An archaeologist? Not necessarily. But Kaufman, because he's a physicist, Barr doesn't think that much of him. They did when he first came out with the article. But Barr started backing Rittmeyer. As a matter of fact, Biblical Archaeological Review is the name of the magazine. We call it Barr, Biblical Archaeological Review. They started backing this fella. They gave him money to go over there and make an effort to locate more definitively, that is, to gather proof that what he said about the temple setting here was correct. What he did, in my opinion, is dishonest, because I think he's a smarter man than this article he just wrote. gave him credit for. Now, why am I spending all this time? Way back in 1983, even before that, I had located, and I knew of, and went over and located an actual temple, not temple, but an underground cavern right in here. It's called Zedekiah's Cave. Now, at this time, it was just a little small cave, 614 yards long. I went in it, and I went back, and I found numerous passageways that were caved in. I put this in the first set of tapes I ever made years and years ago. And I could tell from the way that these cave-ins were, the rocks had fallen down, that they must go further back. And I said at that time, if they ever begin excavations under there, this thing will come all the way down and go under the Temple Mount. And I've shown proof of that here before when I gave that long, lengthy, boring discourse on Zedekiah's cave and the location underneath this Temple Mount. Now, I've been over this many times, and I'm not going to bore you with it again. But I've shown you the cisterns in a line right here. I've made numerous cases to prove that this is hollow underneath here. It's not a theory, it's a fact, because you've got about five cisterns lined up along here. Now, in 1983, when Kaufman came out with this idea, I really liked it, because I knew it was hollow under here. And when Kaufman came out with it, there was a fellow right here that was going along, a young archaeologist, and he happened to notice that there was a cave in here to a large tomb and underneath the Golden Gate. And he located a Herodian arch under it. And it is Herodian, and he actually took pictures of it. Well, what's significant about that is this. This Herodian arch would have lined up with the temple. And if that's the case, the Dome of the Rock is sitting over here. Then they discovered a little cupola back in the northwestern corner. And they called it the Dome of the Tablets or the Dome of the Spirits. This Herodian arch that they discovered underneath the Golden Gate, they've got one really good picture of it right across here. And it's definitely Herodian. This is, I believe, the gate that Christ made his triumphant entry. If so, it was a requirement that the priest, when he offered the red heifer, be able on the Mount of Olives to look over this, to look directly through the beautiful gate, through the Nicanor gate, through the open gate into the holy place when he offered the red heifer, and when he sprinkled the blood. All this was an absolute requirement, and there had to be an alignment. Now this little cupola sitting right back here, and here's the Golden Gate, and underneath it is the triumphant entry gate of Christ. Right about here would have been the beautiful gate. Right about here would have been the Nicanor gate. Right about here inside the temple, we're heading west, would have been the gate into the holy place. And right about back here would have been the curtain. And right here under this cupola, we don't know how far back the name goes, is a little place where I believe Kaufman advanced the idea, and I believe what he said was right, is where the dome, where the actual Ark of the Covenant sat. After I discovered this, I made a special trip over there after I read his report. And I checked this out. I'm a certified meteorologist. The dendritic patterns in this show erosional wear that would be just about right for the time that it's been uncovered, provided this was covered up about the time the Dome of the Rock was built. And it's a nice, smooth, level surface. And I believe this is where the Ark of the Covenant sat. Now, back over here, you can't even see the dome. The dome's too far south. Now, this latest fella is making an awful lot of money. He's selling all kinds of stuff. Hal Lindsey didn't used to believe this. But finally, even Hal Lindsey got hooked in on it. And in his last book, he indicated, ancient writings, including the Mishnah, indicate that the eastern gate led directly to the temple, which faced eastward toward it, and even he bought this. So now people who are such strong advocates of Hal Lindsey, at least I can use him as a reference. This could not have been a mere coincidence. The eastern gate must have been purposely aligned with the place where the Ark of the Covenant rested within the holiest part of the temple. He also believes it's back here, not underneath the dome. So what we're left with is two different ideas. And they're important. Right now, the caves of Zedekiah probably come to right about here. They haven't gotten back underneath the actual where the actual Antonia fortress set, but I think they're close. And right back under here is Hala. Now this is what Kaufman believes, and it's what I believe. Right here is where that cupola set. And this little thing was prepared to set that on it. And right over here is the Golden Gate, and underneath it, that gate that they found when it sank in those graves. It lines up with it east to west. Now the other idea is, by Kaufman, that the actual temple set down here. I think he's full of turnip seeds. I think the man's making a lot of money, and I think that you're getting a lot of material that's coming out of the Mideast. It's not worth a dime. Now here, on the platform, is that little cupola. And right in here, as far as I'm concerned, is a flattened, beveled, level stone, part of the actual temple that it's set on. Well, here's why I did all this. Kaufman just came out in Barr with a brand new article. Quite frankly, I think it's atrocious. I'm going to write a letter to him, something I rarely ever do. This is that big ugly rock underneath the dome. He says right here is where the Ark of the Covenant sat. Now, he's wrong, and I'm going to show you why. Right in here is Crusader-type quarry. And he's quick to point that out because he doesn't want you to realize this. This place right here is just where an actual chip was taken out. The way they quarried back then was to actually put things down in there and set them and then later on chip it out. This one was actually chipped out. These back here were being prepared and weren't, but that was chipped out. So he goes into an elaborate display of how this measurement proves that's it. That's not it. I'll show you why. Now here is the actual diagram he uses. He uses this one, and he uses this one. What we're looking at is this little thing right here where he swears the Ark of the Covenant set, or says the Ark of the Covenant set. So let's take a look at it in closer detail, because you're going to be getting a lot of information about this, and you're going to read it in Time and Newsweek, and they're going to say, Ark of the Covenant position located, and it hasn't been. Right back here is where they were preparing to cut this out. Right here is where they actually cut it out already. This place in here is where they cut one out to be used as a steeple or something. This is another one where they quarried it out. You can actually see where they were quarrying back here, but he says right here is where the Ark of the Covenant sit. I'm surprised he'd do that. And the reason I'm surprised, he's an archaeologist, and I think he ought to have better sense. Now this is what it looks like. Here is the rectangular depression. You say, well, Brother McElmurray, if that's the same size as the Ark of the Covenant, then how come you don't think that's what it is? Show me anywhere in the writings where it indicates they set it on a stand exactly the same size that it was. They didn't. But I know it's not for this reason. Take a look at this. Headed toward the north. If this right here is where the Ark of the Covenant sat, then the face of it is pointing straight north. And they've been sprinkling blood on the backside of an angel's tail for 2,000 years. The Ark of the Covenant faced east. And what I don't appreciate about the way he wrote the article is that he didn't even discuss this until he got to the very end. He very casually says, oh, he said, that was probably because the rods in it wouldn't allow it to be put in that room. And that's also a bunch of baloney. The reason I'm telling you this, you're going to read lots of articles in lots of magazines about lots of things. And most of them have no idea what they're talking about. He also said, and this is in a leading archaeological magazine in this country. He also just took a nice little thing here and showed you the walls of Herod's temple. And he set one right over the rock. And let me tell you how ridiculous what he did. He said, that's why they called it the foundation stone. That's crazy. That thing sticks up 6 feet, and you wouldn't want to use that for a foundation stone. The only reason I'm doing this is to show you. You're getting a lot of crazy stuff that comes out of there. So So let's take a look at this. Rittmeyer's latest temple displacement. On page 54 of the January-February issue of Bar, 1996, Rittmeyer casually dismisses two things that made his new placement of the Ark of the Covenant invalid. This statement is made. One puzzling detail. Now, after he gives this long, complicated article, goes into all these measurements, I mean several pages, and goes into all these details, he says, the one puzzling detail, the ark placed in this depression would be positioned with its narrow side facing the front of the temple. That means that they've been sprinkling blood toward the backside of a cherubim's tail all these years. This means that the nation was worshiping toward the backside of a cherub during the reign of Solomon. Why? Because the front of the ark would be facing north, not east. The statement continues. This was necessary, however, because the 10-cubit long staves on which the ark was transported could not have been removed if the ark had been placed with its long side facing the front of the temple. Now, people read that and they say, they measure that off. They say, why, he's right. That must be true. But let me show you why it can't be true. If what Rittmeyer says is true, then the Jews violated the law of Moses. They were not supposed to be removed. Notice what this says. And thou shalt put the staves, Exodus 24, 14 and 15, and thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them. The staves shall be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. So, what kind of an archaeologist is it that claims to be doing work on biblical sites and doesn't even pay any attention to what the most affirmative document available says? He's making an awful lot of money out of a lot of people. They're doing it. Archaeologists are doing it now. TV evangelists are doing it. Everybody's having a heyday. One thing you can't accuse me of is making a lot of money off people. Three reasons Rittmeyer's idea is wrong. One, the ark would never have been placed toward the north for worship. Why? This comes from the Mishnah. This is how they worshipped at that time. Becheroth 9:5b. A man should not behave himself unseemly while opposite the eastern gate, since it faces the Holy of Holies. Footnote 5. The Holy of Holies was visible from the high ground on the slope of the Mount of Olives. Midoth 2:4. The high priest that burns the red heifer and stands on the top of the Mount of Olives should be able to look directly into the entrance of the sanctuary when the blood is sprinkled. Parar 4:2b. If the blood of the red heifer was sprinkled not in the direction of the entrance of the Holy of Holies, it is invalid. So, if that's the case, then all this blood for all these years is invalid because it has not been sprinkled toward the Holy of Holies. Matthew 27:51. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. By a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, and having an high priest over the house of God. Now, Rittmeyer says that the reason the ark was placed with its narrow side toward the worshipers to the east and the two altars and the three holy gates of entrance was because they could not have removed the 10-cubit staves which were used to carry the ark from the ark rings in a 20-foot area. So why is this wrong? It flat states in Exodus 25:15, the staves shall be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. And yet he says that's why they put it facing the north. He knows good and well that isn't true. Because throughout the entire history of the worship of all Israel, everything was always toward the east. Even the coming of the Lord is to be directly from the east. And don't tell me he's going to walk up a cherub's tail. Malachi 4:2-3. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. And ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. Rittmeyer is a much more intelligent man than I could ever hope to be. I'm not questioning his intelligence. I know he's smarter than I am, and he's a much better archaeologist than I could ever hope to be. I'm a professional certified meteorologist. I'm a geologist, but I'm only an amateur archaeologist. So I'm not questioning his credentials, but there are some things I am questioning. I'm questioning why he does this, because he's got a catalog full of stuff you can order, and he wants you to order this and order that and order this and order that. And this guy knows better than this. Rittmeyer states on pages 48 and 49 of his bar article, "The rock now stands almost 6 feet above the floor of the Dome of the Rock." That's what he states. "The floor of the Dome of the Rock is just a few inches lower than the floor of the northeastern corner of the Temple Mount, where the cupola known as the Dome of the Tablets stand." That's what I wrote. "I agree that the huge stone," I wrote this part, "under the Dome of the Rock is about 6 feet higher than the immediate surrounding Temple Mount surface. But the Mishnah, referring to the rock foundation on which the ark rested, says it was only about 3 inches higher." That's what it says. And he knows that. He didn't fall off a turnip truck coming into town. Yoma, that's the Day of Atonement. It's in the Mishnah, Yoma 5:2. "After the ark was taken away, a stone remained there from the time of the early prophets, and it was called Shetaya. It was higher than the ground by 3 finger breadths. A finger breadth is about 1 inch. But if you want to know how high it was, it's actually 3 finger breadths. It's set that high. Rittmeyer knows that. He knows that rock is 6 foot high, but he doesn't tell people this. I think the guy's after money. "It was higher than the ground by 3 finger breadths. That's what it says. That's from the Yoma. On this he used to put the fire pan." Now, he's talking about a stone underneath the ark, Shetaya. I agree that it was there, and it did set on a stone. It was about 3 finger breadths high than the surrounding ground. That's about high. I haven't really measured it, but I think that's about high off the ground this rock is that I'm claiming that I got from Kaufman Sands. Now let's take a look at these footnotes. Up here where it says, "This stone on which the Ark of the Covenant rested, after the Ark was taken away, hidden, a stone remained there from the time of the early prophets." Who was that talking about? These are the footnotes. The word in reference 10 says hidden, Shechem 6, 1 and 3. 11, "From the time of David and Solomon." That's the time it's referring to. These are the footnotes taken directly from the Mishnah. "And it was called Shetaya," literally foundation. It was called foundation stone. But it wasn't the foundation of the temple. It was the foundation where the Ark of the Covenant sat. That was 3 finger breadths high. Now, number 8 is on a different page, but I wanted to put this on here. "When he reached the ark," well, this last part, "on this he used to put the fire pan." It says that on this foundation stone that was 3 cubits higher than the surrounding ground around it, the priest used to put a fire pan. "On this he used to put the fire pan." Okay, where did he put the fire pan? He put it on right there near the ark. He carried a fire pan full of smoking coals in there. "When he reached the ark, he put the fire pan between the 2 bars. Well, what are the 2 bars? Exodus 25:13. "And thou shalt make staves of shittim wood and overlay them with gold." Bars equals staves. He set that fire pan down with the smoking incense on it before he sprinkled the blood right smack dab in between those 2 staves. In a moment I'm going to act this out and let you see what it looked like. Now this is the actual Yoma 5, 2 and then 1. "After the ark was taken away, a stone remained there from the time of the early prophets, and it was called Shetaya. It was higher than the ground by 3 finger breadths. On this he used to put the fire pan." Now let's read this. This is the man who took it. This was the high priest on the Day of Atonement, Yoma. They brought him out the ladle and the fire pan, and he took his two hands full of incense and put it in the ladle, which was large according to the largest of his hand, a small according to the smallest of his hand. And such alone was the prescribed measure of the ladle. It was about the size of a hand. He took the fire pan in his right hand and the ladle in his left. I don't know how he carried the blood. He may have made another trip. He went through the sanctuary until he came to the space between the two curtains separating the sanctuary from the Holy of Holies. And there was a cubit space between them. Rabbi Joseph says, only one curtain was there, for it is written, the veil shall divide for you between the place and the most holy. But these two curtains were considered as one. The outer curtain was looped up on the south side and the inner one on the north side. He went along between them until he reached the north side. When he reached the north, he turned round to the south and went on with the curtain on his left hand until he reached the ark. When he reached the ark, he put the fire pan between the two bars. He heaped up the incense on the coals, and the whole place became filled with smoke. He came out by the way he went in, and in the outer space he prayed a short prayer, because he did not prolong his prayer lest he put Israel in terror. So the Lord doesn't like long prayers either. Now, I want to show you how this fits together. First of all, this is the Ark of the Covenant. Let me take that thing off. This is the Ark of the Covenant. Something like that. Here are the two staves, or two bars. Okay. Where was this? In the Holy of Holies. Which way did it face? Rittmeyer's got this thing pointing north. He's wrong. Now, let's talk about these two bars. Let's talk about something else. There was no light in the holiest of holies. The priest was not allowed to carry a light in there. It was pitch black dark. Now let's talk about a problem. What happens if he gets in there in the dark and he touches the ark? He's a gone Gosling. He's dead as a doornail. What happens if he touches these? Nothing. That's what they carried it with. Absolutely nothing happens. This is what they used to carry it. Just don't touch these bars or staves. So Ken, I want you to stand right here. And you, I want you to stand there like a big bar. Come on over.
Okay.
Stick your hands straight out. Just stick them straight out. Okay. Now right here, this is the ark. It's a fat ark. This is the ark. Here are the two bars, the two staves. If that gets behind your eyes, just close your eyes. Make a wish. Now, here is the double curtain. One here, one in front of it. It's one cubit in between, 18 inches. Okay. The front curtain has got this side rolled up, but the back curtain isn't rolled up here. This curtain over here is rolled up inside, but the front part isn't. These are very thick curtains. It's pitch black back there, pitch dark. You don't carry a light back there. It's not allowed. So what happens? Here he comes. He's got the stuff. And first he walks over here to this side. Now remember, he goes here, and this side's looped up, but there's a curtain in front of him, but here's this one looped up, and he walks in between it. Now he's in between the two curtains. He walks right down this 18-inch, or about a cubit, till this side, then the curtain's behind him, and he's got this one locked up in front. He's allowed to touch the curtain. He's feeling this curtain all the way down. All of a sudden, he doesn't feel a curtain over here. I mean, all of a sudden, he feels this one rolled up. He goes around here. How in the world is he going to keep from touching that ark? The curtain. He's got the curtain right here. He has the curtain here. And he walks along, pitch dark in there. No light is allowed. And he keeps feeling this curtain. And he keeps feeling. He is not going to touch that ark. And he's feeling. And pretty soon, he feels the stave. Aha. He walks a little further. and he feels the other stave. Then right here, he knows he's right in the middle of it. These are the two bars. He lays it down on the foundation stone, and then he knows where it is. That's the way they figured out where the thing was. Now, that's not in a book. Thank you, Ken. That's not in a book anywhere. But I figured it out, and I think it's right, because I know there was no light back there. And that's another reason that this fellow's wrong. Now, I just showed you that. I don't know. I felt like that things like this are important in that there are going to be a lot of different discoveries that are being made over there, a lot of different things that are reported. But the truth of the matter is, not only among preachers is there arising a tremendous desire to make money, but it's also arising among every other group that's associated with the Bible. So when you pick up an article from somewhere, one of these religious magazines, and they tell you, yes, it has been proven that the ark set where the Dome of the Rock set, maybe and maybe not. Now, there are a million and one reasons I don't believe it's set there. And, you know, things like this, people say, well, I don't see where that's important. Well, there are other things that are interesting about it. It's going to come up on that Temple Mount. It indicates that in the future, that's where the Millennial Temple is going to be built. There are a lot of different things the Scriptures indicate are going to happen. I think the better equipped we are in understanding not only what the truth of the Bible is, but just what truth in general is about some of the things that come back from over there, the better off we are. And it's 5 minutes to late, and Bob, you better shut her down.
Boy, he had when I was supposed to cut off.